Welcome back to the Fostering Conversation podcast presented by Welcome Home Youth Advocacy. Today around the table, we've got Mike Schaefer, myself, Brant Nine, and making his podcasting debut, Denny Yoder. Mike, why don't you kick us off for today's episode?
Thanks, Brant. Hey, I just want to thank you guys first off for kind of being here and coming with me today and doing this. We introduced Hillary Jarrell last week and heard her and her husband's story. And Hillary's one of our board members, and Brant and Denny are both board members as well. And I kind of wanted to give all the listeners a little bit of background about them and kind of where they're at and why they joined this. So, Denny, how about you kind of tell us a little bit about yourself? And yeah.
Sure. Thanks, Mike. Married to my wife this spring for 50 years, celebrating just an awesome time. Wow. Three married children, 10 grandchildren. One of those is not a bio. One of them, our son, has a young man in his family that they've had for 9 years. And it's been a wonderful experience for us. And I know it doesn't always work out that way, but in our case, it's been a lot of fun. And don't even think of him as a non-bio grandchildren. So it's really, from my standpoint, as a board member here, it's just a blessing to be able to be a part of what I see as God pulling the church more intentionally into providing for and meeting the needs of the least of these.
Yeah. Denny, you're our director of discipleship here at Walker Houston Missionary Church. Can you tell us how you ended up here? Like, what did you do before? And then how did you, how'd that lead you into ministry? And then you ended up here, and now we're working with Mike. Can you kind of fill in those gaps for us?
How far back do you want me to go, Brant? Let's just say a couple decades. Yeah. I spent 30 years in the business world.
There you go.
And in that time was really involved as I led a company in North America and had a few hundred individuals reporting to me. And in that particular situation, had the opportunity to wear my faith on my shirt sleeve. And be able to share that quite often and pray with individuals when questions or concerns or difficulties came up in their life. And in 2016, had the opportunity to attend a DS1 event, Discipleship 1, down in St. Louis. All the pieces of the puzzle really came together at that point where God said, okay, this is what you've been doing. Now you know. And when I say now you know, he kind of brought, as I attended that event, all the different things that I was doing, had questions, am I doing it the right way? Mm-hmm. And really laid it out in a map that said, okay, you're out of business now, retired from business. Mm-hmm. This is what you're going to do. And since then, I couldn't have found a more fulfilling and absolutely love what I do as a discipleship director here at Walker Houston Missionary Church. I was at Napanee Missionary for a while in another capacity.
Yeah.
But I've been here now for 7 years in the discipleship capacity.
And that's how you and Mike met, right?
It is, absolutely. Mike and I met just probably a little over a year ago.
Wow. Well, for me, I am the executive leader here at Walker Houston Missionary Church. Prior to that, I was a teacher for about a decade in the Waunee Community School System. Excuse me. taught fourth grade for a number of years and then ended my time in education at the middle school. And loved doing that. Have a huge heart for kids, still do. And just love investing in the next generation, seeing them reach and achieve goals, and really just providing a service for the least of these is kind of the whole purpose behind, in my mind, behind the why of when it comes to teaching and coaching and molding young minds. I'm married to my wife, Francie. We got married in 2014. We have three beautiful boys. Logan just turned two today. Archer is 4 years old, and Hutch is 6 years old. And we are living life and trying to figure out how to parent correctly. And every day I feel like we're trying new strategies. And I mean, anybody who's listening who has kids, you know that you're constantly redirecting. You're constantly evaluating how you're parenting and reading books or watching shows or listening to podcasts on how to parent better. And so really my whole life, no matter what role I'm playing as in a job, has been surrounded by this idea of molding and developing the next generation. And as a disciple maker, right, and Denny alluded to this a little bit too, that should be our job, not just with kids, but even our peers and the people around us. And so how do we better the people around us, and how do we allow them to better us? So anyway, that's a little bit about me.
Yeah, no, thank you. You know, it's interesting. In listening to both of you guys and sitting here, like, we have an interesting cross section of men in the room. Like, we're all fathers. Denny, you're father of, you know, adult children that have kids of their own out of the house. Brant, you're a father of young kids, and I'm a father of teenage kids and one that's 19 going into adulthood. Mm-hmm. You know, and full transparency on my end, I definitely have had my missteps as a father. And I, you know, as I alluded to before on my first episode here, I was separated and divorced from my wife for 7 years. And I was, you know, for a long period of that, I was out of my kids' lives, and they really suffered because of that. And, you know, and I experienced that as a kid, not having a father in the home and bouncing around. Mm-hmm. And so I guess my question to you guys is how important do you see it as being a father now? How important do you see it as having that fatherly influence, that fatherly stability in a kid's life? Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of these kids in foster and in those situations don't have that. And I, you know, I can't speak from the motherly end, obviously, but the fatherly end, I think it's so important that a kid has that and has that stable point, especially, you know, for a son to learn what a man looks like and what a man should be, and for a daughter to have a safe, you know, trustworthy man in her life, you know, and stable man in her life throughout her life.
I think Denny and I have two different perspectives on this as far as upbringing goes, but then, and we've landed kind of in a similar mindset, and this is my thoughts prior to hearing you, Denny, but we've landed in a similar mindset just because the Lord has worked in our lives, and we've seen examples in different ways. But I'll let Denny share first here, and then I'll follow up.
As I was raised, my dad, I had two very involved grandfathers in my life. So I had three men in my life on a daily basis, and spent several years of my developing middle school, early teen, before driver's license, at my dad's father, my grandfather Yoder, on the farm working as the hired hand. Mm-hmm. And so the influence that I had, both from my father and my grandfather, molded me significantly. And I can hear and play out in my mind those scenarios where I goofed up as a kid growing up. I can remember cleaning the milking area one morning. Grandpa had to go probably to the feed mill or somewhere to get something, so I'm cleaning up. Well, I was a little disgusted with one of the cows because she wasn't doing what I had intended for her to do as I was cleaning up. And so I took the brand new broom that we had, and I whacked her, busted that broom right in half.
Oh, no.
And so I thought, wow, I don't want to get in trouble for this. So I put the handle back on as it broke and took a hammer and tapped it so it was nice and tight. And I thought, well, Grandpa's going to pick that up, and it's going to break, and he's going to think he did it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, interestingly enough, He never said a thing until the evening after supper. He said, Denny, did you have trouble in the barn? And I thought I was going to get, and I, at that point, obviously, it was bugging me all day. And yeah, I, and he immediately said, don't ever keep it from me. Tell me right away, and we'll work through that situation.
Yeah.
There's no punishment when I know right away. Mm-hmm. We can figure out how to get through it. And so it's those kind of things, I think, that grandfathers, fathers pour into your life. You know, I the skills I have today with my hands and work and construction and all those things, I got from my dad.
Yeah.
And so the kind of input for me molded me into who I am. I can truly say my and my mom's dad, my grandpa Swihart, that's where I got all my outdoor love from the time I was 3-4 years old, fishing, later on going hunting, spending that time outdoors with them.
Yeah.
So again, my molding came from the men of my life.
You had an intentional relationship. They were intentional with you.
Very much so.
Yeah. So my upbringing is a little bit different. Both my parents were older when they had me. Both of them were in their 40s when I was born. I had older siblings, and I had no grandparents. All of my grandparents had passed when I was born. So my dad wasn't the best version of himself when I was younger. When he was around, he was working in the garage, which there was times when he let me, you know, come out there and be around him, but very impatient. And if you're in his way, he let you know it. There were times when he just wanted to watch golf. I remember that on his lazy boy chair when he got home from work. And so there was very few times when dad was intentional. When he was, though, it was like gold. Waking me up at 5:30 in the morning, hey, we're going to go fishing today. Like, it was just like those kind of surprises. It was just like I wanted to hang on to every inch of that. Parents got divorced when I was 8. Didn't see dad for a little while, and then, you know, had weekend visitations growing up. Moved around for about 10 years and lived in 15 different homes with my mom and my two sisters. So really, I was surrounded by females most of my upbringing. But here's where God's grace is so good. So in the times that we moved, there was always a male figure there. Wasn't always a Christian male figure, but there was a male figure who intentionally spent time with me, who would allow me to tag along with his kiddos to something. You know, as I got older, there was a lot of Christian male figures in my life who just let me be a part of their family, mentored me, taught me to pray, those kind of things. So, you know, obviously I had this tainted view of father and what that meant growing up in some ways. And, you know, when I tell my testimony, I always reference a story where my dad, I asked my dad to play catch with me in the backyard, and he said, yeah, but when you drop the ball, I'm done playing with you. And he threw the ball as hard as he could every time, and I kept on grabbing it, and I was so proud of myself. And there was one time it was just too hard, and it fell to the ground. And by the time I had picked it up and looked up, I saw my dad's back walking away back towards the garage. And that memory sticks with me because, you know, I saw my dad for a number of years walk away in so many different ways from me. But what I came to realize while I grew up and had different people invest in me is that our Father in Heaven picks up the ball, and he's the one who says he's proud of me and continues to work with me even when I drop the ball. And then miraculously, and this is where my dad and I rekindled a relationship. The last 5 years of my dad's life, we lived a block away from him. And it was beautiful watching him be a grandpa invest in me in ways he never had. And it was almost like, you know, he never said sorry per se, but he showed it in his actions. So that was a beautiful thing. And then my father-in-law has been an incredible father figure as well. And so, you know, and even being here, and I've said this to a number of people, I get to observe Denny and his intentionality, and I get to observe Chris Knight and his intentionality. And there's other men within our church, Rich Whitmer, and people that God has placed in my life as male figures to kind of watch, observe, and then apply. Watch, observe, and then apply. And that doesn't mean I don't swing and miss. But I think I'm 30. How old am I? I'm 32 years old. I'm 32 years old, and I think that now more than ever, I'm a sponge to male figures. And it was partially because I didn't have as many consistent ones growing up. I had them in spurts, and that was amazing, and that helped me grow. But now I have consistent males in my life who model what it is to be a father and model what it is to be a man so well that I'm like a sponge, and I just absorb it, and then I try to apply it. I absorb it and try to apply it. So I'm to the point now where being a father and being a man in those ways, I'm learning and applying faster than I ever have. I don't even know if that answers your question, no, yeah, Mike.
it's interesting because, you know, I look at my experiences growing up and having an abusive birth father that, mm-hmm. you know, wasn't in our life. And then, you know, don't get me wrong, I had good, there was good men that were foster parents of mine, you know, bouncing through that system. But, you know, it was sporadic, and they came and they went. Like, that's just how the system worked. And, you know, then my adoptive father, you know, they got divorced. My parents did, you know, 2 years after I was adopted. And I was not, as a son, I was not the priority, I feel like, that I probably should have been. I don't think any of us kids were. And, you know, so in my adult life, I struggled a great deal knowing how to be a father because it was never modeled for me, you know. Mm-hmm. And I saw that play out in how I fathered my kids and what I did. But, you know, I've had people come up to me over the last, you know, year, 2 years, and especially the last year, and, you know, tell me what a difference they've seen in my kids because of the change in me, mm-hmm. and how I've invested in them and been intentional in my relationship with them, mm-hmm. you know. But also going back to, you know, my childhood and my teen years, like I saw that affect my sister such a great deal, not having their dad there in their life, and they've struggled in their adult life, you know, now with that, their relationships with men have just been, you know, really difficult, and just there's not the stability there that should have been growing up. And so, yeah, it's interesting. I just kind of wanted to get kind of your guys' perspective on all that. And having kids of your own, you know, you don't really think about it, but when you kind of take a step back, it's like, wow, you know, I do have a big impact on these people, you know, these kids of mine. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. You guys have both kind of walked along with me in this process of welcome home since the beginning. And, you know, I know you guys have had like some connection and some kind of like knowledge of the foster care community and the adopted community, but what has been the most surprising thing to learn going through all this that you guys have kind of found out?
For me, I think one of the most surprising things is the statistics, mm-hmm. number of kids, and then how that plays into their life. Not just, okay, I was put up for adoption, or I'm a foster kid and bounced from one or two homes, but what that does in their life and how it affects their development, their education. And as I look at those and begin to look at the overall, actually overwhelming statistic of how that, I want to say almost slows down their development, slows down their ability to be successful and to be an impact in their own world and society in a positive way. Wow. I mean, it's just amazing. And that's the wrong word, but it is overwhelming, mm-hmm. when you hear the numbers, just the raw numbers.
Yeah. I think, well, first off, I'll start with what's not surprising. What's not surprising to me is the educational disparities. And that's because I was a part of the school system and I saw these kids come and go and come and go. And each time they came, the process of getting evaluated for, you know, an individual education plan or a behavioral disorder or whatever it is a long process. And so you have a kid who's in the system and they move in. This is just an example. They move in and they're in my classroom, let's say. And it's easy to identify a lot of times. This kid probably needs to be evaluated for something, right? And it's not just foster kids. It's anybody. Like, they move in and you're like, okay, they're either on level, they're not on level because they've been moving around so much, right? There's no consistency. And then there's the cases of this kid probably has a learning disability or this kid has some emotional disabilities and we need to service those kids correctly. But you can't legally unless they have the documentation. Does that make sense? So let's just build a scenario. Here's a foster kid who moves in and they're in your classroom for, you know, 2 weeks, let's say, and you as the teacher identify they need to be evaluated. So you set up an evaluation, which could take 30 to 60 days, maybe even longer, to get them evaluated. The evaluation process is weeks, a couple weeks maybe. And then they come back with the diagnosis that you bring in the parents or the guardians and you discuss it with the teachers. You know, that's another couple weeks. And then you can start applying services. So you're looking at a semester. These kids don't last a semester.
No, yeah, that's crazy.
They don't last a semester. So they're gone before you even get the chance to get the documentation. Like you try to, a teacher's mindset is this. You try to get the documentation in before they move so that when they move, they can start serving those kids immediately. And it just doesn't happen. Now, let's say they come in and they don't have a disability of any kind. Or a deficiency of any kind in their learning capabilities. You as the teacher have to evaluate and see where they are in terms of where they're at grade level wise. You could hardly get that done before they moved. And so now they go to a different school and they try to get it done before they move. And nobody ends up knowing how to teach these kids because nobody knows where they're at. You know, we talk about meeting kiddos and meeting people where they're at. I think the hardest thing when it comes to the foster and adoptive community with the kids who are constantly uprooted is that nobody knows where they're at, and so they can't meet them there. And that's, to me, why there's such an educational disparity. So that's not surprising to me. What is surprising to me is just how much I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm coming into this and the Lord's really working on my heart, just chiseling it away at this community of the least of these, that it's kind of like the blinders have been on. And so I've learned a lot in the past few months and the Lord has softened my heart and actually, you know, called me to action. And Hillary, you know, and Ryan, when they shared last week, it doesn't have to be the same for everybody. Like what they're doing and what others are doing in our community for the foster community is incredible. They're on the grounds, they're in the trenches, but there's other ways to help those families. And I think that so many of us get paralyzed into, I'm not ready to have another kid in my home yet, or I don't think I could do that. And reality is you could, right? I could. But if you're not ready to do that, there's other ways to get involved. And I think, you know, it sounds so simple, but when they said that, like, provide us a meal. Provide, like, an outfit. Like, help us so that we can help the kids. Like, there's different forms of ways you can support. And I just thought, like, it goes back to the concept of I can give 1% more than what I'm giving right now. So if I'm giving 0%, I can give 1%, right? Or wherever I'm at. So I think it shouldn't surprise me, but it does, how little, you know, I'm helping and could help. And just learning along the way of everything that, like Denny said, the statistics and everything that our community has or doesn't have and the needs that are still out there. I think those are the surprises.
Yeah, you know, we talk about it a lot, but awareness is a huge, huge part of the problem. And I think it does surprise people when they finally find out, like, what's actually going on and what's actually happening in their backyard. You know, Brent, we've heard, you know, stories of people in the Wanee School District that have gone through this and dealt with this kind of stuff. So it's not some faraway thing. It is really right here. Speaking to, you know, you talk about the statistics and some of the numbers, and you both work in ministry at the church. And, you know, to that, you know, you see some of those numbers and they're surprising. I guess my question is, with that, is the Big C Church doing a good job of helping this community and taking care of this community? And I look at it, you know, there's 400 to 450,000 kids in foster care. There's 300,000 churches in America. There's 135,000 kids with no parental rights just waiting for adoption. If they don't get adopted, they age out and then they're on their own. There's 300,000 churches in America, and this 25,000 kids age out every year. Nobody there to help them. Are we doing a good job as a Big C Church to help this community?
I'll start. I think the simple answer is no. Overall, I think there's a lot of variables and complexities, right, that go into each specific church. But if we're talking about the body of Christ, not a building, I think we have a society that we live in that we're constantly trying, as Christians, we're constantly trying to fight against the current of consumerism. And this is my faith. I just want to be fed. I don't really want to be stretched. I don't really want to be uncomfortable. And to be completely honest, helping the least of these and serving people in that way that affects me, that affects my daily life, is terrifying. And again, causes me not to want to move. And I think a lot of people, Christian people, are in that same boat. It goes back to, I referenced it last week or a couple weeks ago when we met with Hillary and Ryan. It goes back to the I don't want to know, the blissful ignorance, right? And, you know, there's a lot of situations around our world and in our nation that Christians, it's okay that we're ignorant to it. You know, they have that mindset because what I don't know won't hurt me. And and I think for the most part, Mike, I think that's where the church is at. It's that blissful ignorance of they don't really want to know. And but I think that there's a lot of Christians in the body who, if they did know, they would move. And so that's where I think your mission is so important. A large number of those people, I do think, would step up. They're just uneducated. And that's where you come into play in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we talk about specific things in a church. We can all agree, like, sex trafficking is terrible. We talk about how terrible it is. And we talk about people going to prison and having these issues. That's terrible. And, like, you know, that's so, but the numbers from this community, 60% of people that are trafficked come from the foster care system, you know, and 80% of our prison system is filled with people from the foster care. Like, it just blows my mind, you know. Sorry, Denny, I didn't mean to interrupt, but just kind of interject there.
Yeah, yeah.
I think one of the things that, you know, two words come to mind as you shared, Brent, somebody will.
Yeah.
That's the mindset of so many in the big church. Oh, somebody will take care of that.
Yeah.
Well, if we all think that somebody else will, nobody
will.
Does.
Yeah.
And I think the other word that comes to mind is intentionality. And we talk about that a lot here, Walker Lewis Missionary Church, in discipleship, in our lives, and in our efforts, is It doesn't happen if you're not intentional. Yeah. And intentional takes away, oh, somebody will. That goes away when you become intentional.
Yeah.
And like you said earlier, it doesn't, that intentionality doesn't mean I have to immediately step into the role of a foster parent.
Right.
It may mean, well, maybe I ought to supply a meal, or maybe I ought to just say, hey, I can do this. I can rake your leaves, or I can do something like that.
Yeah.
That's where the intentionality begins to change the actions of the church, is when we start to even get involved in the little things.
Yeah.
We don't think the little things make a lot of difference, but they do.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, and I don't want, you know, anybody that's listening to take it the wrong way and you know, and think I'm saying that only believers and only church people should be helping, because that's not at all. Like, I think non-believers and everybody can help. That's not my point. But I'm just saying, from our standpoint, as all three of us, you know, being believers, like, we have a responsibility. We are called to, often right. in the Bible, to take care of this group of people.
Because of our faith, it should move us to action, right?
Yes.
And we were just talking about that yesterday here at the church. Because of our faith, you know, there. Compassion, Kyle Eidelman says this in his book, One at a Time. Compassion doesn't stop with the feeling. Compassion is all about the and. So it's that compassionate empathy that leads us to action. Do something. You know, Jesus always did something. He didn't just see it and say, oh, that's too bad. He did something. And so, you know, we're talking about the church and the body. What can we do? It's not, should I do something? It's, what can I do? And I think that's how I'm growing as I learn more from you, Mike. And really, it takes, you know, if we zoom into the local church now, you know, go away from the entire body and zoom into the local church. It takes one person to start a movement. And I think you're doing that here. And it's not just about this place, this local church, but our region of that it's filled with local churches. And so how do we take what you're doing and some of the things that Hillary's group is doing at Napanee Missionary Church and some other partners around here and pull those resources together to create a movement that is moving in action.
Yeah, I mean, to speak to, oh, go ahead, Dennis.
I was going to say, you know, Chris has often said this, the next 5 years are going to go by anyways.
Yeah.
So don't wait. Might as well get started now, because it's not going to wait.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to happen. Time's going to keep going. Let's get involved.
Yeah. It's good.
Yeah, I've been, you know, incredibly encouraged by, you know, you mentioned Hillary's group and some other people that we've met with, and just how well received Welcome Home has been in this community, and just kind of even the people that have been living in the community for, you know, 5-10 years, and just how excited they are to have something that is for them and that is recognizing them and noticing them. You know, speaking about the church, Denny, you're really involved with missions here at WAC EMC. How, you know, we don't think of missions as local most of the time. How does missions and, you know, that kind of aspect of the church align, and how can they align with what we're doing?
Absolutely. You know, when Jesus told us in what we call the Great Commission, Matthew 28, go ye therefore into all the world. Well, so often we think about that statement as, oh, I need to go to the other side of the country, to the other side
of the sea,
of the ocean.
Yeah.
I got to travel days to get to the other side, to get to that world.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I challenge individuals with, and here's what I really believe, and I'm not trying to put my spin on what Scripture says here. I'm telling you how I see that word world.
Yeah.
I see that word world taken literally. My world is where I operate, who I come in contact with, who I see from day to day. So when we take that and look at, okay, how can I be involved in changing my world?
Yeah.
Is mm-hmm. every time I open my front door and I go out, it's, okay, how can I be involved in changing the people that I come in contact with? What can I get involved in my world? And so if we all looked at that,
yeah.
and Brant, you look at your world, you're coming in contact with different people than I do. Mike, your world, coming in different people than Brant and I. Yeah. So if we begin to apply that, literally, as Jesus said, go into your world and change it.
Yeah.
I see that very applicable into the foster and the adoptive and what Welcome Home is doing in the world that you're involved in.
Yeah. No, that's great. Thank you. So before we end up here, I kind of want to do a little plug here for something that's going on over at Napanee Missionary that Hillary talked about last time we were on. They're doing the Hope for the Journey conference there from April 10th through May 8th. That's some really in-depth trauma training that they're doing for this community. And anybody that deals with, anybody that goes through trauma doesn't have to just be foster and adoption. It's open to the public. It doesn't have any cost. It's each Wednesday night through that time period from 6:15 to 8, they have childcare up to fifth grade. So if you're worried about your kids, they just ask that if you do have kids, register on their website there and take advantage of that opportunity, guys. Last question I want to ask you guys is, you know, no restrictions, no anything. What would be the biggest thing you'd like to see us do as an organization moving forward, you know, for this community and in general?
I'll start. I think you've talked about providing a foster closet, and, you know, really, I think the dream is to have a building
mm-hmm.
and not just for the sake of your organization, but for the sake of the community.
Yeah.
You have done so much in terms of research and talking with different people and organizations and the families that are actually in the trenches. And this is a need. And it's not a need from 9 to 5. It's a need 24 hours a day. And so the availability that you want to provide, I think that's what I'm looking forward to is when that's a reality. Like anything, though, trying not to rush God's hand in this, right? Because I think what we've found, and again, I'm very much not – on the front lines. Mike has done so much. Denny has walked alongside of Mike in a lot of ways. And I've been a support when needed, but I've got to see how there's expectations and reality. And when we wait on the will of God, it actually ends up being a better reality. If we try to force our expectations sometimes too fast, then it's a train wreck. And so I've appreciated the way you've approached it, Mike, and just, you know, constantly watchful for God's will to be done, and you've continued to learn, and I know it's going to happen, and it's not about you. It's more about serving the foster and adoptive community. So that's what mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to.
I know this sounds mundane, but I echo exactly where you're at in that is to have that place for the community, to have that reality, see that come to take place where all of a sudden it's that 24-hour service, that 24-hour opportunity for the closet, for that call. When what do I do next? Who can I call? Oh, yeah, Welcome Home. Call them. It's that opportunity, and I echo everything you said, Brant.
Oh, that's great. I thank you so much, guys, for joining me and just having a conversation with me. It's been great.
Glad to be here.
Yeah. We are glad you joined us today. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and our website at welcomehomeyouth.org. As we look to further the message and advocate for the least of these, we're signing off for now. May God bless you in the days ahead.